Blog Talk Radio.
With Dr. Reggie Johnson and also Gloria Wells, our chat room moderator. And we are your hosts and co-hosts this morning as we continue our book study of Gary Zukav's Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. And what we're covering right now is how to work with our emotions, and controlling our emotions. And today we're going to be talking about learning to be a coach. And this is such a powerful, powerful lesson. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. For those of you who have been with Circles of Prosperity for a while, I know that we're laying the groundwork, and a lot of these lessons will appear repetitive. It does not hurt for us to hear the same information again, especially from a different author. It just reinforces the truth principles that we have studied. So I'm enjoying this journey, and I hope that you are too. As we move through this book, we will get through, because he laid it out in several major parts. And the first part is about the soul, and which we're going through now. And so he's taking us all through the process of looking at our emotions and understanding our emotions and how they play in our spiritual development. And he calls this whole section the why of everything. And then we will move into a section that's called the what. And I'm sure that that's going to cover what is our authentic power. So just be patient with us. I think it's important always to have a very sound foundation before we really get into the lofty, lofty things. So we're going to, and really and truthfully, we all need to work because at our spiritual growth. And you'll see how this is all connected with your spiritual growth. Good morning, Dr. Reggie. Let me turn your mic on. How are you this morning?
Oh, thank you. Good morning. I feel wonderful.
I know you thought I was neglecting you.
No, I didn't. I never thought that. I listened very intently.
Oh, bless you.
I know sometimes when things are repeated, it's because not only reinforcement, but it creates impact. Faith comes by hearing.
Yes.
You hear these words again, it honors God, and so it's going to increase the faith.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Well, if you know what, I didn't have a chance to tell you that I love you this morning.
Oh, honey, I love you too.
I do. What a precious soul. I love you. Okay, so why don't you take us into our morning prayer?
Dear Heavenly Father, God and Goddess, maker of everything and every species and every galaxy, we thank you for having bodies in which to feel and move and to express ourselves and with emotion and with feeling. Teach us and help us to maintain these emotions that are positive outwardly to the world and to put at bay the ones that are negative, resentment, anger, frustration, doubt, disbelief, revenge, hate, all these horrible emotions. Let us keep them away from our spirit and let us be protected by the energy of love, the one emotion that matters the most, the one that's being hidden most of the time from us when we experience outside influence. Let us learn to love the experience, to love the neighbors, to love nature, to love all people, to love our families, our spouses, and friends. Let us love because that is the highest emotion in the universe. Thank you, God, for love. Thank you. And when we express love, which expresses you in all of its myriad forms and manifestations. Let us first of all love ourselves and love who we are, and people in our presence will know that we love them automatically and authentically. We believe this is so, and so it is.
And so it is. Thank you so much, Dr. Reggie, for blessing us this morning with that wonderful prayer. Thank you. Okay, so we're now into Chapter 6. We're learning to coach. I absolutely love this chapter. Listen, if you have your book, mark this chapter down as the chapter that you will use when you are teaching others, especially your kids, about their emotions. So let's get started, okay? Imagine that you are a coach of a team in a game called life. And you have numerous players, but only one of them can play at a time. The player that is on the court at the moment is always the one that represents you. Whatever that player does, it is as though you did it. If that player is elegant and graceful, then you appear elegant and graceful. If that player is crude and selfish, then you appear crude and selfish. Each of your players is world class. One is an expert at anger. Everything that happens angers her, and she is continually shouting, withdrawing, and blaming someone for something. She needs no warm-up. She is always ready to play at any moment. And whenever you call upon her, she brings her top-flight anger onto the court. Then you have another one. It's jealousy. And another one that seeks revenge. And your team roster is large. Another player is patient, and nothing can distract him from his patience. No matter what, when you call him, he brings limitless patience to the court. Another is grateful. Whatever occurs, she is just grateful for it. Another is content. Another is caring. And others are kind and disdainful, impatient, overwhelmed, and anxious. But whenever you want to play contentment, caring, kindness, disdain, impatience, overwhelm, or anxiety, you can call upon them and know that they will bring that to the game flawlessly. Your responsibility is to choose the player that you will put on the court at each moment. You can confer with others, but only you can make the final decision, and whatever you choose, you are responsible for the consequences. If you choose to play anger, you experience the consequences of anger. If you choose to play kindness, then you experience the consequences of kindness, and so on. So the consequences that your players create, equally meaning your emotions, the consequences that your players create when they play are always significant because each is the best at what she does. You are always fielding the best jealousy, the best kindness, the best disdain, the best patience, the best vengefulness or gratitude that you have. The court is never empty. One player is always on it, playing full out, and all of your players are eager to play. Your players will always do their very best, so when you play anger, for example, it will create the best consequences of anger possible. And what is that? Isolation, loneliness, shallow relationships. You cannot stop experiencing the consequences that your players create for you because one of them is always on the court. However, the more closely you watch your players and notice what experiences they create, well, the more skill as a coach you develop. So at first, for example, playing anger might be your favorite choice. But after a while, and sometimes it's a long while, you begin to experiment with playing, let's say, patience or jealousy or disdain or gratitude. All the while, you're noting the experiences that your choices create. And here's another thing. Everyone around you is also a coach. Like you, they are continually choosing which of their players to put on the court. Their players never appear on your court, and your players never appear on theirs. You see the players that they choose, and they see the players that you choose. But the players that they choose go onto their courts, and the players that you choose go onto your courts. For example, a coach near you may play anger. This will be especially exciting to some of your players. Oh, the anger, the resentment, and the superiority that's sitting on your bench will be eager to play and will present themselves to you as strongly as they can. So until now, we have assumed that you know all the players on your team, but incredibly, many coaches do not. Most know some of their players, but not all of them. The players you know about are always waiting for your call, but those that you do not know about will take advantage of your lack of awareness and step onto the court when they please. It is as though you temporarily become unaware of the game. And you know what they call this? Unconsciousness. But the game, nonetheless, it still continues. It is always going on, whether or not you are aware of it. So one of your players is always on the court, always playing his or her best, and always creating consequences for you. That is why some people become angry so often, or jealous, or hold grudges, or judge others, or themselves, or gossip. Because they are not yet accomplished coaches. They are not aware when certain of their players enter the game. For example, when another coach chooses to play anger or is not aware that her anger has stepped onto the court, then your anger, if you are not aware of it, will step onto your court and begin to play. But if contentment was playing when this happens, contentment will be sidelined, and anger will take over the game. So the more of your players that you know about, the more control over the game. The more control you have over the game. And when you know all your players and are familiar with exactly what they do and the consequences that they create, well, you can play the best game possible. You have at your command the entire spectrum of your capabilities. However, in the process of getting to know all your players well, you may decide that you do not want to play some of them at all. In fact, you want to retire them from the team. If you find that the consequences of some of your players, that the consequences that they create are always painful for you to experience, you will avoid playing them and begin to choose players that create different consequences. So if you find that the consequences of other players create joyful experiences, then you will play those players more and more. And eventually they will be the only players that you send on the court. No matter what other coaches play, you will choose players that create consequences that you want to create. The players that you decide to retire, they do not leave the team willingly because they are accustomed to playing when they choose. Before you became aware of them, they stepped into the game without your opposition, and they dominated it all. But after you became aware of them, they forcefully demand to be played. And the more you choose other players, the more forceful their demands become. If the player is anger, it becomes enraged. It is, if it is jealousy, its jealousy becomes fierce. It is tempting to play these mutinous players in order not to feel their jealousy and rage and vengefulness and so on, which are all painful. However, the consequences that they create on the court will always be painful when you encounter them. Either you encounter the pain of their jealousy or their rage or vengefulness, etc., when you do not play them, or you play them and encounter the pain of the consequences that they create for you. So after a few seasons as coach, your experience will show you that as painful as it is not to play these players, the pain that they create for you when they play is even greater. And you can avoid their pain momentarily by choosing to play them again and again. But each time you play them, the consequences of playing them bring you more pain. And eventually you will develop the ability to face these difficult players and tell them the news that they do everything in their power to avoid hearing. You are not going to play today. You'll be on the bench, and I'm going to play kindness, patience, gratitude, or appreciation, or any of the players that create consequences for you that are constructive and feel wonderful. And the more you decline to play the players that create destructive and painful consequences, the more they object. They stomp up and down along the sidelines, shouting and screaming obscenities to you and belittling you and judging you harshly and weeping and doing all they can to distract you from the game and to convince or manipulate you into putting them back on the court. But without opportunities to play, they begin to get rusty. This doesn't happen quickly, but it happens. They weaken from lack of exercise, and their focus becomes diffuse. They remain forcefully present, usually for a long time, all the while they're losing their strength and their skill. And they become less intimidating and less distracting. Even when they are still intimidating and painful to experience, their intimidation and painful presence help you develop the ability to be with them and see them and hear them and feel their best efforts to get back into the game. And still, you choose to play other players. And at this point, you are becoming a master of the game, because you're choosing at each moment the best player to send onto the court and accepting responsibility with each choice for the consequences that the player creates for you. And the players that create destructive and painful consequences for you, that refuse to be sidelined until you become aware of them and take them out of the game, they are the frightened parts of your personality. Every one of them, the anger, the jealousy, the rage, the vengefulness, the anxiety, fear, feelings of superiority and inferiority, the need to please others or to shout louder, to shop for what they do not need or to eat what they do not need or to smoke or gamble or watch pornography or drink alcohol or abuse drugs and on and on and on. All of that originates in fear. And the list of the frightened parts of your personality is as long as the list of your painful emotions and obsessions, your compulsions and your addictions. They all have three things in common. One, they express fear. 2, they are painful to experience. And 3, they create painful and destructive consequences. They are also central to your spiritual development. Because fear-based parts of your personality are the parts that you were born to heal. They are your avenues to spiritual growth, not your obstacles, but your avenues to spiritual growth. You cannot develop spiritually and remain vengeful or enraged or jealous or caught in the addictive sexual energy current or unable to stop eating or feeling overwhelmed and so on. Because as long as these players are able to decide for themselves, it, meaning that they're unchallenged by you, when they can decide for themselves when they will enter the game, you cannot grow spiritually. You can meditate, you can pray, you can visualize, chant, listen to sermons, be inspired, and read scriptures, but while your anger and your jealousy and your vengefulness and your fear and your righteousness and your judgments and your need for agreement, as long as they remain outside of your awareness, much less your control, well, they will erupt into your life at will, creating what? Destructive and painful consequences for you. And each time you encounter one of those consequences, a frightened part of your personality again steps into the game, creating even more painful consequences. And you know what the Buddhists call this? They call this process samsara, the sea of suffering or the wheel of life. Painful, painful experiences endlessly activate frightened parts of your personality, which in turn create more painful experiences until you intervene. Because without your intervention, your life unfolds robotically, as it has in the past, from one painful experience to another. You appear to be at the mercy of chance. You're praying for good luck and desperately seeking to avoid your pain. These are the experiences of what? A victim. In other words, unskilled coaches do not realize their central role in the game of life. They watch as passive observers, unaware that they are choosing which players will step onto the court and which will not. But spiritual growth requires locating, experiencing, and challenging the frightened parts of your personality. You're choosing not to play certain parts, certain players. So the more you ignore them, and meaning that you repress and you suppress or you deny your painful emotions, the more they play and the more painful consequences you encounter. So he says this, he shares this story. When I first realized that spiritual growth requires me to become aware of everything that I experience, including my painful emotions and feelings of inadequacy and ugliness and unlovability and shame, those were the players on my team. Well, I felt crushed and defeated. And those were some more players, weren't they? And my last hope of transcending my painful experiences and ascending above them and detouring around them and meditating or praying them away or in some manner avoiding them was shattered. Because that realization was my first glimpse of myself as a coach, and I did not like that role. I still wanted someone or something to remove the pain and the emptiness from my life, and I did not want to look at the possibility, which equals and means the reality, that I was responsible for that job. How many of you can relate to that? I can. Dr. Reggie will tell you. I mentioned it to you yesterday. I did not want to be responsible for my life. It was someone else's problem. It was always someone else's. Someone else was doing something to me. The players that feel good to experience and that create healthy consequences which are pleasing to encounter are the loving parts of your personality. And when they are active, you become patient and caring and joyful, content, kind, interested in others, and grateful for your life. And you have absolutely no memory of fear. You know that you are alive for a purpose and that what you are doing serves that purpose. And you have everything you need and you are fully engaged in the present moment. You cannot play a loving part of your personality and a frightened part at the same time. For instance, you playing patience and sidelines impatience. So the more you play patience, the stronger it becomes, while impatience loses its strength. And after a while, impatience begins to atrophy. And the frequency and the intensity of its demands diminish, and eventually it loses the ability to impose itself on you. And then it becomes too weak even to influence you. It continues to object to being on the bench, but it can no longer play unless you decide to play it. So as you become aware of yourself as a coach, among the first things you notice is how many frightened parts of your personality are on the team and how often they play. This is always an unexpected and even a disturbing discovery, because if you thought of yourself as gentle and caring, for example, you would be very surprised to discover players on your team which are parts of your personality that are enraged and actually brutal. So if you are indignant at the idea of prostitution, for example, you will be surprised to discover, like many clergymen who have campaigned viscerally against prostitution, that one of the players on your team is addicted to sex. I've noticed that the preachers that are totally against homosexuality and stand in that pool, they're the ones when we pull back the curtain are involved in homosexuality. Not that I pass a judgment on it one way or the other. It's just that I recognize the behavior. Sometimes an unaware coach gets a glimpse of players on her team that she did not expect to see and refuses to look again because she does not want to confirm what she is not willing to believe. And the more she refuses, the more those players step in onto the court at their pleasure and the more painful consequences she encounters. Sooner or later, she will make the connection between her painful experiences and her choice of players. Even if she does not want to admit that she has players that create painful consequences for her, and begin to schedule let's get acquainted meetings with each of her players. So making this connection, usually it takes a long time and many encounters with many painful consequences, but it does not have to. If you understand this game that we call life and your role in it as a coach, you will not need to wait until the accumulated agony of countless painful consequences overwhelms you and you at last begin to explore the relationship between your pain and your choice of players. Because what? Multisensory perception illuminates your role and your abilities and your responsibilities as a coach. It does not require you to play this player or that, or to create this consequence or that, or even become acquainted with your team. Instead, it reveals the potential of a life unlike any you have experienced before, with challenges unlike any you have experienced before, and with rewards
unlike any you have imagined. Wow. I love this chapter. Press 1 on your telephone keypad, because I know there's somebody out here that's going to say, wow, let me tell you something. I knew it. Go ahead, line them up. Press 1. Good morning, 1283. You're on the air.
Good morning, good morning. It's Gloria, and I did want to jump in on this one. This chapter was absolutely brilliantly written in terms of allowing you to take a new look at how you're handling people and situations and your emotions. One thing I want to share is after I got done with this chapter, I thought, wow, that is amazing. And you know what popped in my head was a book I had written by, by Abraham Hicks, Ask and It Is Given. In that book, she gives the emotional scale. It's 22 points on an emotional scale, anywhere from really good to really bad. And what clicked for me was that emotional scale was the players that I was using on the court. So that was an amazing discovery, too. So I connected those two, and I am working with a starting lineup at all times, let me tell you. Yes, I'm perfecting my starting lineup, and I want them on the court at all times. So I just wanted to share that this was brilliantly put together in terms of the analogy that was used, that we're all, those emotions and feelings are all players that we're choosing to put on the court. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you so much, Gloria. I love this analogy. It is the best analogy for teaching that you are responsible for your life, that you're responsible for the what you are experiencing, the reality that you're creating. And
I'm not hearing you okay there. I can barely hear you. You're going in and out.
It's because I have Reggie's mic on. Is that better?
That is much better, yes.
Mm-hmm. I was saying that what I loved about this is that it's the best example to teach people that they are responsible for their life, for the reality that they're creating in their life, and the importance of that your emotions play in creating the experiences that you have in, from moment to moment. So thank you for sharing. I love
you. Love you too.
If you have a question or comment this morning, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. Do I have anybody on the line that is moving from victim to coach? Nobody? Good morning, 9120, you're on the air.
Good morning, Reggie and Cynthia, Tristan and Pam.
Hi, how are you guys this morning?
We're doing pretty good after this and after I got home. But just wanted to say that this was exactly what both of us needed to hear. Tristan's listening to it as well.
Hey.
Tristan's my 12-year-old son.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you, precious?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. You're 12, right? You huh?
Yes.
You know, I stopped counting after 9. I tell everybody, oh, he's 9.
No, but just wanted to say we're both listening to it, and it's right on time.
That's
and
awesome.
We have been playing our different players on the team, on opposite teams, and we're coming to the understanding both together that we are creating our reality by our actions and our words, and it's important for us to understand that we are living what we're feeling.
Yeah.
And sometimes what we're feeling isn't comfortable, or it doesn't feel good sometimes.
Exactly.
And I can admit to myself and to my son that whenever I am feeling something negative, well, what we consider negative, it's good to feel it so you can acknowledge it and then let it go. So in love. You know, as Reggie has always said, you always deal with everything in your life with love, and eventually you'll understand that the love is helping you heal.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I don't have the book, but I've been listening to various broadcasts,
uh-huh.
and everything I've listened to up to this point has always been something that I needed for whatever reason, you know, so it's always a divine thing happening. Even in my call this morning, it was just perfect timing because there were some things that Tristan and I needed to face and to release and let go and go in love.
Thank you so much. I love both of you guys. I love you, Tristan.
Love you too. Love you too.
Okay. Growing up is not easy. I'll be the first one to admit it, but you'll make it.
We know. Yeah. Thank you, guys. We love you.
We love you, too. Okay. 5601. Hold on. Your mic is coming on. 5601. You're on the air.
Oh, that's me.
That's
hey,
you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am perusing the shows here this morning.
Uh-huh.
And where are you located?
We're in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, that's the second capital, I understand, in the future. First one is supposed to be Denver. At least that's what I was reading on the Forge News earlier.
Uh-huh.
They're saying that the Navy's saying that that's where they're going to send their key personnel to those two cities. So you're very lucky to be in Atlanta, Georgia. Not that I believe that, you know, not that I believe that, but that you're supposed to be the highest area on the East Coast. Anyway, what caught my attention about your show was it is the logo and circles of prosperity. Then I happen to read the three words below your logo, and as soon as it comes back, it says spiritual keys to success. And then I heard you talking about you being a coach, and I guess you have a spiritual players. Is that what it is? How does that work?
We are in the middle of a book study called Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. And today's chapter was on learning to coach. And the author of the book, Gary Zukav, was using an analogy of the lesson is about the fact that we are in control of our experiences in life, that we are creating our reality moment by moment by making choices. And he used the analogy that you are the coach of the game of life. You're the coach. And the players are your emotions. And so if you choose to put a player out, let's say the player of anger, then you have to suffer the consequences of whatever anger creates. So that's the gist of the lesson. It's really to teach that you are responsible for your life and the experiences that you have.
Oh my
now,
God. I so didn't even know what you were going to talk about, but I have been reading something very similar.
Okay.
Unbelievable. I was sent to your show for some reason. I don't know what it is, but I'm reading a book called Thinking and Destiny, and I'm reading about the operation of the law of thoughts.
Uh-huh.
And in it, he's just saying that you create your own destiny.
Yeah.
Nobody else does. You create your own. It's
yeah.
the way that you think. It's your thoughts and he shows the process, and that's what I'm studying now, the elementals and things of that sort, of how a thought is created in the first place in your heart, and then it goes up through a certain process, and then if you continue and know what you're doing, that thought can either come through, as long as you're coming through with a good heart, it's going to be something good.
Uh-huh.
Or in your previous life, you may now be getting that thought, and if you were doing something bad in your previous life, this thought is probably going to give you a bad outcome, you know, something about karma.
Right.
And it's very interesting that he's talking about control, and in here it's saying that basically the same thing. You have to control your thinking.
Yes.
Your thinking is wow. Wow. Unbelievable.
Doesn't that blow you away?
I am definitely going to mark your page here. I'm definitely going to save this. I mean, here I'm actually studying this about the same stuff.
Uh-huh.
Out of this book that was written back in 1912 or 1946. And he said it wasn't made to the new century, 2000. So this book was not made for the people before us. It's made, mm-hmm. it's made for the peoples right now.
That's right. And
wow, unbelievable! You know, I didn't really understand what you were all talking about, and then all of a sudden I heard these words come out of you all. Especially that lady that called in,
uh-huh.
and it blew my mind.
Wow.
It definitely raised my vibrations this morning. It's 7:41 here in Newburgh. I'm on the East Coast, too. I'm in Newburgh, New York, okay, about 70 miles north of New York City, about 11 miles from West Point.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I've worked down there.
Uh-huh.
But unbelievable.
Well, I am so glad you joined
the
us.
The word is going out. The word is going out.
It
People
is.
All over are raising their vibrations. That's what we all need to do is raise our vibrations.
That's
it's
right.
very key right now. There's some things that can be manufactured and made and people would enjoy it, but there's too many low vibrational people around keeping all these ideas from coming out. As soon as people start raising their vibrations, I feel this firmly, then we're going to start. The way I look at everything, let me just say what I greet everybody with is love, joy, and peace. As soon mm-hmm. as you see those words, you got a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And with a positive attitude, it affects the attitude of the other person. They may be coming up to rob you or smack you in the face. And that's what happens on our block.
So right.
That's the life fear. It's very low vibration. But I'm a very high vibration individual. And people can feel that. So I say love, joy, peace, and extend my hand out, try to shake their hand. And they're shocked to death. Oh, Lord. What's wrong with you, man? Are you all right?
What's your name? What is your name? What is your
Bob.
Name? Bob.
Bob. Yeah.
Bob, I so appreciate you calling in this morning. Our show is getting ready to come to an end.
Oh,
and,
you are?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even look at the time on there. Yeah, 2:33. Let somebody else get in here. Spread the word. Spread the love.
We love you. Continue to follow us and listen to our archives. You'll be delighted, I'm sure.
Okay. I'm going to do that. I'm going to see what you got in there. All right.
Thanks. Bye. Dr. Reggie, I know we have another caller here, 2508. I'm not going to have a lot of time.
I don't need a lot of time. Good morning, first, to both of you and to our class. This was a powerful lesson. This is Cody Smith. Hello?
Hey, go ahead.
And I just wanted to say that I was all ready to wonder where did this guy come from. And when he got through wowing and explaining, and we can see that this message is universal. But I wanted to just touch on briefly the lesson of this morning. And a lot of this, when you go from victim to victory, it's a lot to do with the radical forgiveness and the forgiving yourself. And I won't elaborate because it would take too long, but I just wanted to thank you and Dr. Reggie. This was a powerful lesson. Wow.
Wow, thank you. Dr. Reggie, we have less than 30 seconds for you to do your closing prayer.
Heavenly Father and Mother God and Goddess, we are so blessed to have an incredible lesson and an archetype of what this lesson represents for our emotional growth. to demonstrate emotional intelligence. No anger, no fear, no revenge, no resentment, no jealousy. Help us to keep these emotions at bay and act as if we were Jesus himself. How would he respond and react to people? When he was confronted, there was silence. If it was negative, if it was positive, he always responded in joy and love with children and adults alike. Let us take this example and wear this cloak of beautiful spirituality in all we do. We believe it is so, and so it is.
And so it is. I love each and every one of you. God bless you. Have a wonderful day. We'll be here tomorrow, 7 a.m.